On today's episode of Project Pundits Unplugged, Braden gets a lesson in social media.
So one of them the other day, we were talking in a group and they said, oh, hey, I posted this thing on, it was Instagram or something like that. And they turned to me and say, oh, Braden, for your information, Instagram is a social media platform in which people post.
Nice.
I'm like, oh, I'm throwing it back.
Jim enjoys violence.
Did you laugh really hard when the coyote, like, got...
No, I never found that. No, but this was just Jim Carrey's face. He's like, he can do these facial expressions, and then he's just like...
Where's my thumb?
Where's my thumb? Like, that's what it's like. It's like he's just blood squirting out of the thing.
Braden's colleagues suggest birth control methods.
And so they were having a little celebration or something, a baby shower. And they gave me a Best Buy gift certificate, card or whatever. I'm like, cool, guys, what's this or whatever? And they're like, buy a TV for your room.
Oh, nice. That's hilarious. All right. Hello, everybody. Welcome to yet another episode of the Project Pundits Unplugged Pod. This is
topical?
No. This is what we call a deja vu episode for us, because Jim's audio in a prior recording of this episode, for some reason, did not record. So we are tackling
a certain person. I wasn't going to name names, Jim. I mean, people.
No, I mean, since I gave you crap for when you had audio issues, I need to eat a little crow for, like, not even recording audio. There was that. So we were tempted to take my audio and plug it through one of these, through one of these AI tools to see how good it is at lip reading. And maybe we'll do that I'll do that as a kind of a side hobby thing to see. And then maybe
bad
we'll
lip
add
reading
cool
session.
Voices. Right. I think I'm going to choose like Matthew McConaughey as a voiceover. I would choose Matthew McConaughey for not only like if I had choices, I would not only swap my voice for Matthew McConaughey, I would swap my body for Matthew McConaughey as well. So Matthew McConaughey
by AI, like, that's awesome.
No, I want to do it for real. Like I want to lift my brain out and put it in clone of Matthew McConaughey or Ryan Reynolds, but Matthew McConaughey. Off to a flying start here.
This is a great start, Jim. You're doing fantastic already right off the bat. Well done.
We've got a lot of interesting things. We're gonna be trying to do some interviews, add third party guests on. We have some interesting guests. So it's another. For this week, we wanted to dive a little bit in because there's a lot of interest when we were chatting about AI, and AI seems to be every other news story that's in the news, and for good, bad, and all different reasons. So we wanted to touch on a couple of things. I think the lead-in, you know, from one of the other episodes was primary care providers were going to essentially go away as they exist. Sooner rather than later, and
not sooner rather than later. You said
I qualified
this
it.
Year. You said this I, year. Don't qualify it.
Something qualifying.
No. How are we doing on that prediction? Just quarter. We're in quarter two now.
We're right on track to have what they do be modified significantly within.
Okay.
This year. Yeah.
Really. Because I believe I had a very different opinion. Maybe we'll have to have a review at the end of the year to see how did our predictions do. We should queue this one up.
Well, we could. Yes, no, we should do a follow up on the prediction episode, right? The result of results episode.
You don't sound very enthusiastic about that.
I'm very enthusiastic. Well, let me just throw it to Braden. Let me ask you a question. Would,
yes.
Given everything that's going on, would you prefer that an AI presented you with medical data and allowed you to make medical decisions for things going on in your life? Or would you rather it be a stodgy old person who wants to wait 3 months and test your blood before you get treatments for whatever you might be dealing with? I don't know.
Jim is provoking me, and this is what I get for sharing personal information with him. But
I'm just asking a question.
He knows darn well that I'm struggling with a current physician who does not want to act on my behalf. But yes, no, I'm not disagreeing that I would love to have AI participate, and in all seriousness, totally on board with interacting with, you know, an AI like service, whatever you want to call it, for some of those initial interactions. Honestly, from my perspective, faster, cheaper, probably gets me to, could you front some prescriptions or some other activities by having an AI do it really quick, efficiently, and cheap? You probably could.
That's all I ever said. In the prediction.
Okay. Can we rewind? Can we rewind? Can someone go back? We're going to put that clip in there and just see what he actually predicted, but I don't think so.
I think the role of primary care providers, PCPs, will disappear in its current incarnation within a couple of years.
So I think there's quite a bit to cover in medicine. We want to cover a few topics. I think this will be a recurring thing over the year because a couple of things on the pace of AI. If you're in it, the pace looks almost like unrealistic, and that's if you're in it. If you're not,
it still looks crazy
right.
fast. Yeah.
Every day, literally, there's a new tool that does something amazing, whether it's like just video generation on the fly, or they've developed a model that can rip through, and I'm gonna have to put the links in here to some of this, that they can go through and analyze an entire human genome in a day. Through this and do different things with it.
Jim, can I say one of the really cool things too? It's not just the pace, right? I mean, it's one thing to say, hey, the pace of change is happening. What's really cool to me is the pace of these being available to average people or to average businesses, right? Like, it's one thing to see, hey, I see in a tech magazine that it says that we made this technological leap, right? Great. How is that available to me, or how does that change my life? It doesn't 99% of the time, right? What's weird about AI, weird but cool about AI, is that so many of these tools as it evolves are incredibly available. That's what's, I think, amazing about AI versus almost any other technological innovation, is that AI is becoming rapidly changing and available to people really, really fast. And that's what's cool, I think.
It is. And, you know, it is. Yeah, the tools are out there. They are capped. But again, the average person isn't going to go beyond the cap of what's available for free stuff and everything else. So
if you're a business, you can pay for it and they'll.
And it's not that expensive. Right. I mean, I know I was having this conversation with a friend today. It's just like OpenAI, their subscription, and each of them, if you sign up for like Claude or, you know, some of Google's products, they're like $20 a month for that. But I mean, it is and it isn't, right? It's $20 a month you pay that for Netflix. So if it's going to significantly improve
stuff. $20 a month to write all your essays for you, who wouldn't pay that, right? I mean.
Yep. Hey, man. I wish I had this when I was especially in school and stuff. You know, and that's not to say there aren't tremendous improvements that still need to be made. This is still in its early stages. There's a lot of new things. So we want to cover a couple of topics of things that are coming out. Just, I think, from the health perspective, I think from my perspective, just again, there's opportunities to improve interaction with healthcare data on an individual level. So with AI, you're going to be able to interact with your medical records by essentially chatting with them or talking with them. So you can, you know, you don't have to fill out your prescription list every time you go to a doctor, right? All this theoretically should be available now. You should be able to talk to an AI, get that information, fill forms out. So for an aging generation, I suspect there's going to be a tremendous amount of tools in relatively short order that allow, for instance, you know, our folks or grandparents or different things who aren't as technically savvy to say like what they wanted to do and have it actually work.
Don't you get the sense it's what maybe voice menus were intended to be? You know, like you get on the phone and you say, "Tell me your problem," right?
Yep,
and
it the never IVR. Works. Yep.
Right. It never works. You say, "I want to solve this," and you give a just whole
operator,
spiel.
operator.
Yep. That's what it always ends up being. Is just give me a person. I want to talk to a human, right? But even if you don't, some people, right? I think it's what we always wanted this initially to be was, hey, I'm just going to say some words, a natural language processing kind of thing, right? I'm going to say some words and the computer's going to digest it and say, you know, and invariably what happens today is the computer digests it and it says, "I heard you want the foot department. Is that correct? Press what?" You're like, "Shut up." It never works.
Say yes if you are a college graduate.
Yes.
Or a serial killer.
What? No!
Are you involved in any organizations, such as a church or fitness club?
Yes.
Or a Ponzi scheme?
It's definitely, that is what, you know, the AI capabilities that are evolving are that, right?
Yeah.
They are that. And I think that's a great example of where it is evolving.
And this will be pervasive throughout the conversation with language. So it also has this unique, because of the nature of how these large language models, and that's generally what we're talking about right now, there's more general AI things that aren't quite there yet. But right now we're talking, for the most part, AI accessible tools are built around these large language models, which is, you can go into learning about what those are, how they work, how they're built, but it's around language and it learns everything it does through language. And because of that, it has a lot of unique properties to where you can actually translate between languages because it understands the nuances of the language by reading all of it. So to your point with like, we call them integrated voice response systems, the IVRs that Braden and I have worked on those are the ones where it's like press one to do this, press two to do this. That's the most basic. But then they move to voice recognition, and if you had a thick accent or if an Irish, I have my favorite Irish folks with the thick accent, they never understand it.
Now, if you'll excuse me, it's time for me Lucky Charms with my spoon made out of, you've guessed it, potato.
But with this, you can have a universal kind of understanding and knowledge and talk in any fashion. Those tools are there already. We haven't seen them make their way into the consumer-facing set of things, but it's in the works. So it's super exciting about that. I can see
definitely potential, especially in the medical industry. You know, care management is a really interesting space where you need clinical nurses, you need people with training and background to be able to do a lot of the care management. But a lot of the logistical things that I think some of the are aspects of the care management, for those not familiar with it, this would be they have a lot of insurance companies will have nurses who can help either older people or just people not familiar with the healthcare system to navigate and be able to manage a condition that they have. It's called care management. And usually it involves essentially having a caseworker help you know when your next appointment is, when, you know, what the results of the doctor were, do you need to go get labs, all of these things. Those logistical things that don't require interpretation by someone who's skilled in nursing or something like that. All of that, I think, is just rife for having AI just introduced all through it to help with some of those logistics, including, speaking of language, we're close to where you're going to be talking to people on the phone and not know that it's actually in an AI presence. We're not quite there, but I mean, I'm sure lots of you have probably interacted with, you know, IVR systems that sound almost natural or close to it. Certainly hear YouTube videos and other things that use computer generated voices that sound very natural. We're close.
Now there's already sites and again, I'll, we'll go back through this and put some of these links in just for folks to explore. And people who live in this world probably know some of this stuff, but if you don't, it's just interesting. There's actually services out there, and I should have wrote them down before, but I'll put them in the notes, to where you can spend 3 minutes of talking to some of these programs. It's, you know, a web service. And through that 3 minutes, that is more than enough for it to get a full understanding of your tone of voice, your link, and it can clone your voice and your speaking style by following 3 minutes worth of prompts, and it's like 90-something% accurate. So maybe what Breen and I can do is actually clone her, and we'll do a little version of this to where we type in what we want it to say, and it'll actually use our voices. It's scary.
I'd like to have a version of Jim's voice, actually. That'll be helpful for me.
To put you to sleep at night. I get it. I have one of the most soothing, sexy voices.
You put me
I
to sleep it. During the day, Jim. So right, at true. Night would be fantastic. Would be excellent. You know, so well, can I jump into one, or was there more that you want to talk about on the healthcare?
On health. I just want to say, so one of the other things that's really exciting to me, it's tied to AI. The other benefit of this is getting access to unique insights of things that across multiple sets of data. So every time I eat at Applebee's, my heart rate goes up, or I gain weight you'll be able to unlock patterns between the data, because that's what AI is good to look at, correlations and everything else.
Temporal spatial database.
Yes. Temporal, spatial, yes, with your time and space and all that data. And then, so before we get on, we have a chat before the show, and inevitably, it's mostly me. There's some weird bleep medical thing going on. And what I'll just generally say is that anybody who's lived long enough realizes that generalizations with medicine are just that. We need to get to a point where medicine is and treatments are personalized, right? Genes, everything else, all of that data, I think we're going to get more and more of that. But personalized medicine, I think, is one of the greatest things. And it's just not reasonable to have a high amount of personalized medicine, because that's just not how the medical field works. It works on volume, and we have specific. But if you have these tools that can help do those correlations and summaries, we can get to personalized medicine, which is going to help so many people out. I know my body's a weird. I got weird, just a lot of weird stuff. I don't fit a lot of patterns. So, I'm looking forward to the personalized medicine and, you know, treatments that are, you know, geared uniquely towards individuals. So that was just one other thing I wanted to throw
that
in there.
That's a good one.
On health.
Speaking of gears. So gears has got my mind. I've been thinking about cars. So it's interesting. I think many of us have read, it's so prevalent in science fiction. It's interesting to me too, as an aside note, how science fiction often dictates it's, you know, that imagining that leads to a lot of innovations where people say, hey, I'll bet you we could do something like that. And ultimately, it's through that, I don't want to call it thought leadership, but imagining, right? Creative
imagination.
Thought.
Yeah.
Yeah. That a lot of things get created. So I've read plenty of, I'm trying to remember, it was some fiction where, and there are lots of them, where you have auto-driving cars, right? And that's a common trope in various science fictions, where you just call a car, right? You either go to a station somewhere and say, hey, I need a car, or hop in, or in, you know, kind of the self-serve Uber model, you just hit a button and a car shows up and you hop in and go. We are there already in some places, right? Like there are pilot markets where this actually exists. And to me, I see now, I know the last time that Jim and I talked about this, the really question is, where does this happen, right? I think for now, it's going to be probably in the cities, in high density populations, right? Metro areas, where it's going to supplement, I think, some of the public transportation. I don't think it makes sense just yet too far a distance when you get out into spread out suburbs. I'm not sure that the dollars and cents are there to send a, you know, autopiloted Uber 15 miles out to go get someone, and then they have to drive them somewhere and then another 15 miles back. I think you still need a density to be able to do it, but auto driving cars that you call to come get you and they're completely driverless. You're just a passenger in an auto thing. It is a reality. And it's something that I would have said was pure science fiction and not in my lifetime when I was a kid that surprised me. I don't know, Jim, if you had anticipated seeing that or no.
A couple things. So, by the way, what is underlying that is another, like, we use the term AI very loosely. So if you look at a lot of what Tesla is, I don't know what percentage Elon would put on this, but I would say it's probably more than 50%. They're a software company. So they build and write all their own software. They build all their own hardware. That's why they have a unique advantage, by the way. Whereas other car companies, they have supply chains where they've carved it all up and they have parts from all over the world and everything else. Whereas Tesla just controls the full stack. And the AI software development, it's really complex. So they have sensors all around the car that feed all those inputs, and you have to interpret what they are and what to do with them. So if you ever get a chance, look up some of that. It's unbelievably complex.
The machine learning
complex
pieces of that are extraordinary. And there's tons of YouTube videos that they're kind of transparent about the process that they've used, which is really cool. I was bummed out to see that Apple had dropped out because I wanted it, you know, them being a software company. I was really curious to see. Competition is good, and I just wanted to see kind of how they were doing. But
yeah,
I mean, guess they scrapped it. I don't have lots of details. Do you know why they nixed?
Yeah, there was some. It just wasn't in their core focus anymore, is what they said. Sad. Just look at the car as another device. But most interesting thing I find about the debate about this is if you notice, anytime there is a fatality due to a self-driving car, it either screwed something up or whatnot, they're exceedingly rare. Percentage-wise, they shouldn't even show up on the radar. But because essentially it's so novel and so new, anytime that occurs, it makes national news in many cases, or at least local news, right?
Be interesting to compare the percentage of self-driving cars that get an accident.
That's right. It's not even so. That's humans. The thing, right? It's like one of the biggest, you know, the most unsafe way of traveling is by automobile by far. And most accidents happen, what is it, within a mile of your house. And there's all this. It's expensive. And you know, having automatic systems do that, there's still going to be accidents. There's still going to be fatalities and everything, but they're going to be significantly less. There's just not going to be a person necessarily behind there. So that is one of the headwinds that Tesla is facing with turning this on. It's just people don't trust. It's you're handing over trust to a machine. And we're going to run into this, by the way, a lot. I mean, one of the things we talked about in the prior episode that was military stuff, and we'll probably skip that here. But
wait, before we do that, there's one thing that I've just on the topic of the self-driving cars. One of the things that I'm most excited about. So living in California, LA area, I'm in traffic all the time. One of the most amazing things about giving that control up, right? So let's say that even if I own the car, but it's self-driving, right? There's a really potentially huge benefit in that if you have a whole bunch of self-driving cars at the same time, they can communicate with each other. Jim, in which case, if you've ever seen a school of fish, like all go in sync and they're moving, a set of self-driving cars that communicate with one another and organize can go so much faster than a human being. Because I don't know, and I'm going to do something sudden and then I stop this person, and there's all these kind of chain effects of stupid people driving. There's a lot of stupid people.
That's how it works. It's usually like a person going sadly the speed limit in the passing lane, and it queues it all up.
Term I'm making no, it sound like majority.
It's perfect.
No, it's not. It's people who maybe just aren't skilled or are older and have slower reaction. Whatever it is, stupid. You have self-driving cars, and now without people in the equation, I could be doing 100 miles an hour on a freeway, and if all of the cars are self-driving, they're coordinating with each other, and they're going to let each other over.
Spacing,
and
safety, distances, all that stuff.
There can be
what's
such
interesting about
benefits.
And it's the tech, just, you know, not to put too fine a point on, but the tech is so amazing, right? Because not only does it have to make all these decisions, right? And there's thousands of micro decisions. They have to do them instantly, right? So you can't go back to a server, let the server process it, and then send it back. It has to be right away. And it brings up all those interesting equations. You know, they have those things like, so if you're either going to hit a bus stop where there's four people sitting down, you know, but they're all senior citizens over 80, or there's a baby in the road. Do you kill the one baby or do you plow over the four senior citizens? It's some version of that.
What are the ethics of the,
but they have to build that in. Like if there's a decision, do you kill one person or four old people? I don't know.
Oh, right. I don't think they'll.
But those are ethics that they have to build in.
I interrupted you though to talk about military stuff. I just wanted the self-organizing aspect and communication among cars was something that I'm really excited about.
So I don't necessarily want to talk about the military, but that's a big thing. I think we spent some time on that and just you know, Brandon and I actually debated this a little bit on the last one, and it's like, you know, is it better or worse to have some of these automated decision making systems within weapon systems? And I think Braden was taking a point where it's like, well, in some cases it's actually a better thing. You know, and we could touch on that. If so, I'm going to knock off some other things, cause that's a heavy conversation.
I think that the abstract rather than going into it was just, it's an arms race, right? Yeah. Once you start down that pathway and you say, hey, you know, I just realized an AI can make decisions way faster on interpreting and forecasting, right? Like AI can beat people at chess now, simply period, right? A person can't keep up with AI in terms of chess because the AI can predict things way further out. Similarly, AI can predict much faster and easier the trajectory that this plane or this set of tanks or whatever, you know, pick a military scenario is going to do faster than a human now. And as I'm able to weaponize that or create some sort of practical application for it, it becomes an arms race, right? You say, hey, do I really want to do this? No, but if my enemy is doing it, right? If my opponents are doing this, don't I kind of have to? Skynet, right? And then that's where you have the Skynet missiles.
Pretty much.
I think that there's interesting discussion there, but it becomes not unlike a mutually assured destruction kind of a conversation, I think, in some ways.
Yeah, I think there's all sorts of ethics. Do you allow robots in war to kill humans on, you know, automated or even under the control of humans? Or is it morally more acceptable if you're going to fight in a war to have humans fighting humans? And the answer is generally yes, but then again,
and to be clear, I'm not sure if everyone's aware, but we already do use AI in many applications. So a simple example would be in some of our tanks today, right? The tank will pre-select targets and essentially say, here are potential things that I think might be of interest for you to, you know, for us to shoot at. And then operators can say, oh, yeah, let's go ahead and pick those. So there's a human check on it, but we're one step away.
Yeah, it's augmented. Yeah,
where it's ultimately it's controlled by human, but it's augmented by AI. We're one step away. All you would really have to do is just say, "Hey, I don't need the clicks anymore. Just go ahead and do, you know, execute on those without my input." But right now, I think, and for all I know, maybe they've already done away with the clicks, and we just don't know about it. But
yeah, it's interesting, right? And there's movies about some really crappy movies about this particular topic. Some good ones, some crappy ones.
iRobot was great.
iRobot. I mean, there's a whole bunch. I wrote some down there. If you haven't seen, and I thought they did a great job. You know, I love the cinematography. There's a movie called The Creator.
I just saw that recently.
Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was poignant. Probably for different. I mean, it was a movie about AI, but it was actually about other things, not just AI. It was, I mean, about life and the, you know, how you treat or think about humans, I think, in a way, or intelligence.
Yeah, know? And it just poignant. Like, I don't want to, it's really bad to kind of compare anything to Blade Runner, but it introduced some new concepts, new futuristic things, right? It did world building that I thought was interesting. And I like any movies that kind of try to imagine.
Hey, this wasn't this wasn't a replaying, you know, a 12th reboot of Spider-Man or something. It was unique. It was new. Yeah, I like
it. And there's a couple of other movies. If you haven't, Braden doesn't like taking my movie recommendations, but there's a movie called Simulant, which was interesting. These are smaller. And then there's another movie called Archive. And those were both relatively new. They're independent films. They're pretty good. And if you all haven't seen Ex Machina, one of the greatest recent movies about robots and AI, just super well done.
This from the guy who told me to watch Dumb and Dumber. I'm just letting you know that.
We had a debate before we got on again about. I find it really fascinating because Braden is into physical human and everything else. Yet for some reason he thinks that Jim Carrey in these movies. It just is over the top. Jim Carrey's over the top, and I die laughing at a lot of Jim Carrey movies, and he doesn't. I just find it to be weird.
Do I have something in my teeth?
I will agree that the creator though was a good one, and I think it gets you thinking about things. I know.
I do want to cover one more thing with transportation. Plane safety, planes landing, automated assistance, the need for pilots. There. What I had found out and mentioned in the last episode is that and Braden can talk about another side is, but just from the planes themselves, planes can pretty much fly themselves, land themselves, take off. And again, they can react to data inputs way faster than humans and everything else. But there's been a limited, there's been some level of limitation in place by that and by a relatively powerful pilots union that they're worried about some of this is going to eliminate their jobs. And frankly, yeah, some level would. But, you know, I think as a society, we got to talk about if there's a trade-off between safety and that. You do have to balance it. But, like, for anything related to improving safety materially, that should always be a yes. A computer is going to be much more efficient at balancing, and especially if those computers can talk to each other, planes talking to planes, then a human being is like, human beings may not even recognize a data point that could cause something, right? So, and then Braden had some interesting.
It's scary, and it's scary because you don't want to give up control, right? Yeah, what I had. So, my brother works for the FAA, air traffic controller, and I've actually been to an air traffic control. I got to tour and watch people do air traffic controlling. You can look this on YouTube and sort of see how it happens. But today, and I don't know if everyone's aware of this or not, a controller is given essentially a slice in space that they control, and they make sure that planes don't crash into each other. They essentially keep separation between planes as they're going so that they're not headed towards each other or crash into each other in a slice. Usually it's an altitude, right? So I might control space between 5,000 and 10,000 feet or above. I'm messing up the slices, but that controller essentially is given a screen that shows them the planes in their sector that they're controlling. And by visual looking, they separate planes out to say, okay, you're too close to this other plane. Let me separate you out. And I kind of laughed the first time I said, yeah, but I mean, there's a computer somewhere that's behind the scenes that's just doing the simple calculations here. Like, you could do this on an Apple IIe that ran Oregon Trail back in the day, right? I mean, this is not complex. Surely all the controller doing is just talking to the people, which also wouldn't be necessary. But instead, what I learned is there's no automation. There's no computer calculations. Literally, they just, by visual cues, keep traffic separated. They have some computer, you know, computer might tell them how far they are apart or stuff, but I could probably myself, using an Apple IIe, write some sort of program that looked at these dots on the screen and gave instructions to people automatically to tell them how to separate and orient themselves. Like, and my brother admitted, he said, oh, that we've had the ability, you know, the system is built like current systems, probably like built in the 80s or something like that.
I think it was late 70s, early 80s. Yep.
Yeah. We have the technology to, and have had it for ages, to be able to automate all of this, right? We just don't do, it comes back to trust. Now, what's interesting is the very, very last line of defense that planes have, let's say that traffic controllers have put them on a collision course. If two planes are heading towards each other, they actually do have a device called a TCAS that essentially communicates with other planes. And what it'll do is it'll say, okay, which direction are you going? I'll go up, you'll go down. Okay, got it. And then it'll bark an order to their pilots to say, you know, TCAS alert. I don't know what I'm sure pilots will tell us what it actually is, but it'll say, you know, climb immediately, descend immediately, and the two will not accidentally give the same order so that it saves the plane. So the last line of defense is a plane-to-plane communication through an automated system, but there's so much room to automate this stuff. And again, you have one of the most fierce unions on the face of the planet that's preventing that from happening. That's not going to happen, not in our lifetime.
And, you know, and it's talked about in all the budget tonight. I thought in the last transportation, one of Biden's budgets, there was, there needs to be a mass upgrade. I mean, because it's using ancient hardware and whatnot. So there's flaws even in the, just keeping up the system. Like for anybody who's managed, I remember at, this is going way back, but like they built that building. And if I recall correctly, Braden, they still had token ring network plugs.
When we were there, it was token ring. And in order to get a line to your computer, you used a vampire tap.
Right.
The vampire tap where you hit a little nail into the cable, a little stake into the cable for your line to come to your computer. You're right. You're right.
And so what ends up happening is that it's functional, right? And eventually it's not fast enough and whatnot, right? But the problem is it wasn't so much whether or not it worked. You can't find token ring cards. You can't find adapters. You can't like any of the parts. So we'd end up going when eBay first came out, you'd have to go try to find used parts on eBay just to do it. But that's similar to what's happening with some of this other tech, right? Can't find a replacement hardware. Because no one's making it.
Not just hardware, but the software developers that need to fix it. They're aging out, and younger people aren't learning COBOL. They're not learning.
I was just going to say, this is not the point of this episode.
Fortran, right?
Yep. So COBOL is at the core of a lot of healthcare claim administration
insurance
systems.
Companies, not just healthcare, yeah.
Yeah, not just, right, any really admin systems, right? And I just recently had a conversation with someone about, you know, can we find 20 COBOL developers? And it's like the question is, do we actually train some offshore teams potentially on COBOL? And I'm thinking to myself,
COBOL,
there may not be a choice, right? You may have to do it just to bridge over and eventually get off these.
And it's getting expensive because as those people age out, it becomes a specialized skill. You're paying through the nose to get a ancient developer. We're way off though, and I want to talk about gadgets. Talk to us about
you want gadgets. I mean,
translation is one of the most interesting things to me. We were talking about translation.
So universal. So I'll put the link in here. I committed, as I'm saying, I'm going to put a lot of links. I'm going to have to listen back and just in real time translate from one language to another. Not kind of that. You used to be able to go into Google and like translate, give me the Spanish version of this word or give me the English version of this. And it would translate it, but it wouldn't give you any context or wouldn't take in the nuances of a language and how they state things. With these new translation, there's devices and there's software out there that will translate in real time between languages with the nuances, with the accents, with everything. So I've got to find whether it's an app or whether it's a device, traveling to another country, having something like that is going to be, I mean, there's always Google Translate, but I'm telling you, this is, there's one of these things that will go between 193 languages. So it's remarkable. That's just,
and I was going to say, so I actually recently had an experience with, kind of a real-time translator. I was at a church where they were speaking both Spanish and English. The audience members were either, you know, spoke Spanish or English. And so the speaker was speaking Spanish, and they had a device just sitting on the podium in front of the speaker. And behind them, they had a projector that was, as the speaker was speaking, would essentially just show a translation as they were going. It wasn't perfect. It would occasionally do some maybe amusing, a little bit distracting things. You had to kind of focus and say, okay, I can look past those distractions. But the fact that someone could be speaking and I could get the gist of what they're saying, it wasn't perfect, but it was easily 75%, maybe 80% accurate, or gave me the idea of what they were saying. That's extraordinary. I never would have predicted that in my lifetime someone could talk real time into a device, and I could either see text, or just as easily, I could, if I had an earphone, I could listen and hear what they were saying translated with minimal delay. That's what's just exciting, right? Is that it's real time. Seeing it's not slow, it's real time, which was amazing. Absolutely amazing.
And I committed in the episode that wasn't to be, that we're re-recording. I keep reminding. It's like self-flagellation of my screw up. But I'm going to see if we can release this episode in Klingon, because I think there's a translation of Klingon which would be phenomenal. I just see if we can do a universal translation.
If you wouldn't mind. Let me see. Cause hopefully we can select captions, cause you can pick captions, right? So pick captions, go to Klingon. And so if I said, I'm trying to think of something that I can say in Klingon that wouldn't get translated, right? Like, what do they call those big bat, bat something, their swords that they have now?
I know what you're talking about.
I wish I could say, I'm going to use this batang to cut your head off. And then it wouldn't translate that word, but you know, all I'll say on the universe translator is there's potential there, I think, to really also, to bridge areas that haven't really been bridged today, whether it's travel, I think some people don't travel places because they're nervous about that, right? Or they travel in certain ways, right? Maybe I'm only going to go with a dense group. If I'm free to travel because I have a universe translator that really works well, my goodness, I could feel maybe a lot more comfortable going to the interior of a place and way to the outside. And then maybe it's a bad thing, right? Now I've got tourists in places that at least they were kept at bay because they only went to the Colosseum, and now they're coming into these other places and people get really mad.
No, but experiencing culture more directly. I know Braden, I'm much more nervous about that. And Braden is, you know, it's something I think Braden and family like to do. I get really anxious and nervous, but I think one of the reasons, to Braden's point, is because of language, right? And communication.
It's language.
Barriers.
It is. I don't think you would be nervous at all if everyone spoke English, right? Yeah. You would go wherever. You're not a nervous person. But when language is a barrier, there's an anxiety there that you're like, what if I get, you know, stuck here? I can't tell anyone that I got to be on that plane at such and such a time. It prevents it. It is a barrier. And I would be nervous. In some areas I am nervous, probably as nervous as you. Not as much.
Well, there's
South
different
America.
Reasons, right? Yeah. It's like,
but,
like Tijuana, but you know, I don't think language is the issue in Tijuana, but,
it's not, so it's interesting. Singapore, I didn't know everyone speaks English in Singapore.
Yep.
I had no idea. So there's some
that's
places
right. That's
that
where you get caned if you spit gum on a sidewalk, right? That's
yes.
Yes.
Okay. In all seriousness, yes. Gum, like just don't go chew gum in Singapore. I didn't want to find out. And weird electronic toilets. I know we're kind of at time here, but Jim has this bizarre concept that that we were debating earlier around AI and relationships. Jim, why don't you espouse
we could do a whole episode on this. So
we could.
No. Just so there's a whole slew of, so one of the other developments with AI, right, is because you're able to chat natural language with this and get responses, right? So there's been a development. So character AI, if you go there, you can create an AI based on existing characters. Like you can create an AI that's Ronald Reagan. You can create an AI that's Marilyn Monroe. Any, it doesn't matter. There's all sorts of things, and it'll
or that
it'll
has
simulate.
Tendencies, right? Like I can create an AI that is really excited or
yep, you can
know,
create whatever
animatedly.
Create whatever characteristics you can create your own. They're just one example. And what's end up what has end up was it what has ended up subtitles are gonna be tough on this part. But what's
you got
happened,
more sleep than I did last night. Yeah.
Go yeah, Braden was woken up by strong winds, which is a whole thing.
it is like, a thing. There's like 90 mile an hour gusts. The whole house is shaking, Jim. Just because you sleep like a rock. Okay.
Well, I can't hear anything because I have and I can't see it. So I have a CPAP on. I have headphones and I got the thing to go over my eyes. The sleep. There's a whole
sleep mask
gel
or something. Yeah.
Sleep mask. Yes. And
yeah,
and
yeah,
so
yeah.
Like I, you know.
It's a total, total.
And my bed vibrates by itself anyways. So, so what's ended up happening with some of these AIs, which I think Braden found a little weird, but I think is going to happen more, is that what constitutes being able to have a relationship with somebody. And I would say it's a detailed understanding and being able to communicate and everything else. And if you can get that, you're not getting the physical. And then this is where we got into the physical side of things, which is also now possible. But for right now, just people are forming relationships, and they literally will say they have a significant other that is an AI and that they converse with them and everything else. And we're only at the really tip of this. These AIs are going to expand, and they will know you better because they'll have access to more data and memory than you even have about you and everything else. And they'll know your behavioral patterns and everything else. So it's going to be interesting. I don't disagree with Braden that that's probably not a great thing for society overall. But
as Jim was describing this, right, my initial reaction was, you're a lunatic, right? And that's just silly. And unfortunately, as he's describing it, I go through my mind and I'm like, well, but hang on. I've seen, kids take these little digital pets that are infinitely simpler, right? And form attachments to, their electronica, we'll say in general. Can is
or those Tamagotchis or something?
Yeah, right. Yeah, you have a little, pets and whatever. I mean, and that's just a simple example, but
in a
very real way, I can see how people would get the sense, especially depending on how you personify the interaction, right? If the interaction is through an avatar, if the interaction is through, heaven forbid, a physical device, separate conversation, agreed. But does it seem more realistic, and can people have, I go back to, you can't have a relationship with a non-human, but can it really seem like you have those responses back from a machine? Sure. I mean, I've seen, even in its infancy, ChatGPT and some of these other instances start to create
approximate
personalities.
Right. Approximate a realist. And again, it could be, anything could be customized. So I think, and in Braden, I don't think you've gone and watched this, but the best example is probably in a movie called Her, and it was with Joaquin Phoenix. And essentially that's what happened. So AI evolved and everything else, and people started to have relationships and get married to these virtual. I'm telling you, if you want to see how it can happen, watch that movie. It was a good movie. I see that coming, and I think about
where it worries me. Right, is not unlike today. Right, I've seen plenty of people who have relationships with their devices. Right, who whether or not it's an artificial intelligence, they spend inordinate amounts of time focused down here instead of around them, and the only the primary nervousness for me is more around how much more disconnected can we be from other humans? Yeah, it worries me. And you see problems arising from people who already are unable to interact with others in a real setting. You know, look me in the eye, go walk over and have a conversation. if you want an indicator, go ask a teenager today to call someone on the phone instead of texting. This is just a simple, tiny example. But if you ask someone young today, go have a live voice-to-voice conversation with something, it's like I just asked them to go.
Now you just sound like an old person.
I am an old person.
You sound like our parents who are like, no one writes letters anymore. They're going to forget how to write a letter.
And if you think about that, right? So the reason that I go on about it, or the reason I maybe make a big deal about it, I get it. Modalities of communication have changed, but it's not just that. There's anxiety, right? It would be one thing if they just say, it's not convenient to do that. You're stupid. Okay, that's fine. You want to do it a different way. That's great. But there's anxiety over having to have that direct of contact with another human being. Heaven forbid, let alone I tell someone, go walk up from your desk and talk face to face to another human being. Oh my goodness. That's insane. Now I've asked someone. Yeah, I know. Like crazy. But in all honesty, there is a generational thing there. And I think over time, as there's more digital interactions and maybe, goodness sakes, digital relationships, that scares me. Yeah. There's isolation and there's inability for a lot of people to interact with other humans.
So it'll be interesting to revisit this one, especially when Avatar, to Braden's point, Avatar has become more real robots. So we won't get into the whole topic of robots. There's a very interesting, what's the benefit of re-recording this? And I don't know, Braden, if you've seen it, have you seen the OpenAI video about their robot?
Voice.
So we'll put it in here. It's short enough. We'll embed it in here.
Hey, Figure One, what do you see right now?
I see a red apple on a plate in the center of the table, a drying rack with cups and a plate, and you standing nearby with your hand on the table.
Great. Can I have something to eat?
Sure thing.
Great. Can you explain why you did what you just did while you pick up this trash?
On it. So I gave you the apple because it's the only edible item I could provide you with from the table.
Great. So based on the scene right now, where do you think the dishes in front of you go next?
The dishes on the table, like that plate and cup, are likely to go into the drying rack next.
Great. Can you put them there?
Of course.
All right, so how do you think you did?
I think I did pretty well. The apple found its new owner, the trash is gone, and the tableware is right where it belongs.
I agree. Thanks, Figure One.
You're welcome. If there's anything else you need help with, just let me know.
It communicates in real language and like real natural language. Sounds like another human being, and it manipulates. It's a humanoid robot, and it does three tasks. It puts dishes away, throws trash away, and separates out and is able to distinguish between items to hand somebody something to eat. They said, give me something to eat. And it's pretty remarkable. I will say, I just want to, so Braden talked about kind of the negatives, the isolation, everything else. I will say, going back to the healthcare, the benefit of some of these things is we already have isolation, unfortunately, for a lot of our seniors. So if we can create, you know, if there's a way of interacting with an entity, in this case, it'd be even an AI or a chat, you know, something there's some benefits, right? And then with the language, I think to Breen's point, having some of these tools allows some of the underprivileged or people who are afraid to seek services. So we were talking about traveling, but just think about folks who don't speak English as a first language and they're afraid to seek medical services or whatever else. So they're kind of on the fringes of being able to access care and things like that. We talked some about that in healthcare, but there can be a lot of benefits that come out of this. These things are so revolutionary and game-changing. We'll have to just probably continue to talk about this. We're going to probably talk about how these things impact jobs. That's what a lot of people I talk to are worried about, and it will. And there'll be new jobs, but there'll be a lot of displacement. But we'll cover that in another episode. But I don't think it's all bad. It's really exciting. I think there's a lot of good developments out of here. There's a lot of potentially scary things. We're in a gold rush. So if anybody, I mentioned this in the episode that shall not be named, there's a gold rush right now, and there's billions of dollars of people investing to try to do stuff. And I love that as a tech guy, because that means there's going to be all sorts of new tech. It reminds me, Braden and I grew up during the internet boom. I love that time. The amount of innovation, the amount of websites, the amount of stuff that came out in that period was unbelievable, and we're going to hit that again.
The other interesting part, it is a gold rush. The corresponding thing that happens that also happened with the internet gold rush is you get massive difficulties in understanding how to regulate this stuff. And there was a very interesting decision from India that just came out a few days ago, not that long ago, that talked about they backed off. They originally had said, we're not regulating this, we're not going to be involved, and then now they came back in and said, no, we're actually really going to clamp down, but essentially be heavily involved in the regulation of this. So it's interesting to see how people.
Yeah, India's got to be careful. They're a tech leader, and their industry is very worried. It's one of those things, like, others are going to do it. Yep. So now I will say, Braden, building on that, today, I think it was today or yesterday, and I haven't had a chance to dive in. Europe released their guidelines. I saw a pyramid or a pyramid of the four levels of AI.
So there's like the fruits and vegetables AI. There's the dairy AI, the protein. Something.
No. It's more like, low impact things, like levels of impact that an AI can have, and therefore rules associated with it. I don't know how you judge that. Half this stuff is open source now, right? So people can go off and build it on their own, and government's not going to know. They're not going to self-report that they're building a model on their phone. Like, and that's the other thing. These things have shrunk down to where they can be run on like phones, mobile devices, and they don't need servers.
That's one of the tricky parts, right? Regulating this is going to be all self-reporting, since there's not shy of commercialization. I could develop something internally, and it's not like, a nuclear weapon where you can very easily police and say, hey, to get this kind of material, I'm going to be able to find you. This is going to be hard to track down. Yeah.
And so there's this big thing, and I learned a lot more about it, about this concept of, no, but there's this whole concept, and I've known about it, but I never really understood the concept of regulatory capture. The other thing is, you have OpenAI and some bigger companies going to the government saying, you need to regulate this, and by having them be able to write the rules, they get to capture, the more of a monopoly of the market and stop other people from coming in, right? Because they have such a big lead. We covered, quite a bit, and we've probably just scratched the surface on some of this stuff, but
we have, and we'll come back. I think we're definitely going to come back with I think we're going to have probably at least at some point a how AI impacts my job episode specifically. There's some others. I think education, finance too. There's a few areas that really are exciting, as well as unique. I think I have some strong opinions on education and AI. I think we should be using it like we would Google or anything else, but a topic for another day. I think we're way over time. So we're going to wrap this one up. appreciate everyone joining us today. And of course, feel free to like, subscribe, and share as you will. You know, you have an AI interested friend. They need to see this episode and see our ridiculous musings so that you can flame us in the comments. And until then, we'll talk to you guys next time. Thanks.
Thank you all.